If you look at your bulletin, it says Steve, but you got Ed instead of Steve tonight. But if you want to come up and get some coffee or something, come on up. Be great. Before I get started, it's great to see Dan. If I give you a minute, if you just tell us how long you're here for and what you're going to be doing and when you're coming back.
Thank you. First, greetings from Barb. This is just a really quick trip. I got in last night and leave tomorrow noon. Doing some things down in Jars. Appreciate your prayer. There's so much I could say. We've got in about 10 days. I get home from this. I'm home a few days. And Barb and I will be going to a New Testament dedication, of the New Testament translation in a country in the Middle East, in a small little community of believers, the church here that lives in a context where they're surrounded by a majority Muslim context. And so we're going to go and celebrate it down with New Testament in their language. So that's probably the most immediate thing on our minds. But thank you. It's great to be here. I didn't have a lot of notice before this trip, and I'm actually on my way down to Orlando, but needed to stop here in Jars for today.
Well, we're glad to have you tonight.
Yeah.
Definitely. A surprise. I don't know if y'all saw it or not, but I tell you what, there's a lot of wildlife on Fair Bluff Road. Did y'all see the buck tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I almost hit it. It was coming out, and I stopped, and it got spooked and went on. But that was a big buck, wasn't it? Last year.
Michael's got you covered.
That's what got.
Oh, wow.
I don't think the buck has Geico. Well, last year I remember I saw two coyotes on Fair Bluff coming Wednesday night. Yeah. Two of them. Not one, but two. Right up there as I was coming down the road here. So be careful. Okay.
If there's anything about my standing up and saying anything, it reminded you about seeing deer on the road. Several years ago, I borrowed a car from Ed and hit a deer.
I shouldn't have brought that up. I was not on purpose. Oh, my goodness. All right. If you turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we're going to continue on that. And Glenn and Steve, and I told Steve this, I said they did such a great job. I don't know what I'm going to say tonight because they've done so well the last 2 weeks on this chapter. But we're going to look at four verses. And I like participation, and what I thought I'd do is maybe after every verse, if a man wants to make a comment, that'd be fine, or you can stop me in the middle. I'll have a few questions, and we'll just take it from there. So let's read, we're going to read verses 14 through 18. That's what we're going to do tonight. And it says, "Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be a burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. But be it so, I did not burden you. Nevertheless, being crafty, I caught you with guile. Do I make a gain of you by any of them who I have sent unto you? I exhorted Titus, and with him I sent a brother. Did Titus make a gain of you? Walk we not in the same spirit? Walk we not in the same steps?" And so those are the verses that we're going to cover tonight. In verse 14, it says, start off with, "But the third time I am ready to come to you." Now, if you remember, the first time is when he established a church there at Corinth. Was his first trip. He stayed about a year and a half. And then his second trip was in between 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. And it was a very brief trip, but a very painful trip. And now he's looking forward to coming the third time to the Corinthians here as he's as we're reading this. It says, "And I will not be burdensome to you." Now, we won't beat a dead horse because, like last week, we talked about this a whole lot about burdensome. And what he means by that is that he was not going to take any money from them. He did not want their money because he did not want to think that that's what his purpose was, and we covered that a lot. But there was one thing, though, that I want you to keep in the back of your mind, though. He did collect, he was, if you remember in chapter 8, he was going to collect a collection for the Christians in Jerusalem, okay? Now, let me ask you a question here, if you think about this. Why, well, first of all, let me ask this question. Was it Paul's policy not to take money when he preached? Did he ever take money? Was that his policy, or why would, follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Not to accept money from the churches that he was speaking to, but some of the churches still donated to him.
Right. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this, as far as this church is concerned, why do you think that he did not want them to pay him money for coming to him or a love gift? Why would you think he would not want them to do that?
Mostly because the false teachers was cutting him down, saying that he wasn't a prophet. That's the reason he wasn't accepting money, because he wasn't an original prophet. Because he didn't have no diploma or any letter from any other prophet saying that he was ordained to be a prophet.
Right. Is there any other reason?
Sometimes you think that there's preaching that goes on for monetary gain. So to keep the gospel message pure, and so that there's no confusion that he's where he's coming. Mm-hmm. He came preaching with the power of the Spirit, not so that anybody would think that he's coming for any other reason.
Okay. Good answer, yeah. Because there may be another one. Yes, Steve.
In 1 Corinthians, he talks about what he was doing was not for his own advantage, but that many would be able to be saved. So it was like his purpose was for the benefit of them in preaching the gospel to them.
Mm-hmm. Daniel? One I was thinking about was, could it be a possibility? It really is not a compliment that he didn't take any money. And what I mean by that is maybe because they just weren't mature. You know, mature Christians know that you should give money and love gift and not think anything about it. But these Corinthians, we see the problems that they had. I think it was one reason because of their immaturity. Because, you know, he calls himself their spiritual father and they're their spiritual children. So it could be possibly because of that, just because of their immaturity and the way they act, unfortunately. So, but all those seem like good answers. Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's move on to the next statement. It says, "I seek not yours, but you." You know, the one thing to keep in mind here is that he was worried about their soul, wasn't he? He was not worried about their possessions. He didn't care about their possessions. He was worried about their soul. So he was not seeking anything after them. And then it goes on and makes a comparison here that I've already mentioned. "For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children." A lot of people probably say amen to that. if you are a parent, and I know my parents, they're supposed to take care of you. That's their job to do it. And, you know, I hate to hear parents that say, "Oh, I had to buy you this, and I bought you this and that." Another, I've heard parents say that to children. Well, we've all were children at one time. We had to be supported. It's part of our job as a parent to do that. And so I think he was looking at this from a parent standpoint. You know, he was playing the parent with these Corinthians. Any comments in verse 14? I know we covered that pretty quickly. But any comments for verse 14 before we move on? Well, we'll move on to 15. You know, one comment I would make on this is that if you think about the relationships that we have, you know, parents, children, spouses, that kind of thing, you know, the one thing that breaks up families more than anything, you could say a family feud, is money, isn't it? How many times have we seen families been broken up because of money? And I tell you what, it's sad, but, you know, when someone dies in a family and there's a will and someone thinks they're cheated, it's amazing the attitude. I've been shocked myself, the attitude of some people when there's money to be passed out, their attitude toward it. And it's a shame. And that's what Paul did not want in this situation at all, as we've already mentioned on that. Verse 15 says this, and it says, "And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you." So what do you think he means by that? I will very gladly spend and be spent for you. There's two verbs there. And if you look at it, they're very, I don't want to use the word harsh verbs, but, you know, spend and spent. I mean, they're pretty tough sayings there, what he's saying there. Anyone have any idea what he might mean by that?
I believe when he's talking about being spent, just spend himself as far as giving them his service and his ministry. Mm-hmm. Give of himself to them as far as spending of himself.
Mm-hmm.
He would not really expect anything in return, and he was willing to support his own self to be able to do that.
Yeah. He was giving himself for their souls.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would agree. And it goes on.
It says that it's better to be absent in the body and present with the Lord and be with him, but he knows there's a purpose he's here for. And even as parents, we know that it is sometimes tiring and exhausting when you're sacrificing for your children. In the same token, also, he's not considering his own benefit. He's not considering his pleasures. He's setting all that to the side so that he can be concerned about their souls, you know, mm-hmm. the salvation of as many as he can reach through the gospel.
Yeah. Whether they appreciated it or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely agree. And then it goes on to say this. And, you know, the last couple of weeks as we've been doing this, we've been talking a little bit about the sarcasm that Paul has put in his letter. But I want to, these next words that I want to read is, man, this is right to the heart of what Paul is about to say here. And he says this, "Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved." Those words I know hurt Paul when he said that. And, you know, we can think in our own families. You know, get back to the families. You know, just say you have done everything for your child. And I had a couple come in, and they were talking about their children and how they've sacrificed for them. And the child said to them, goes, "I hate you. I just hate you." And I was thinking about how hurtful that is. You could read it on the parents' face. They were very hurt by that. And I think what Paul was very hurt with their attitude toward him and the things they are accusing him of. And it hurt. And you can see it when he says that, "The less I be loved." But, you know, he had the joy in serving. And I don't think he let it bother him, even though they were not appreciated. And, you know, sometimes if you think about it, when we're doing something for Christ, sometimes we're not appreciated. But, you know, the real test is that how do we accept that? Do we complain, fuss, or do we say, "Hey, I'm not doing it unto man anyway. I'm doing it unto the Lord." And I think that's what Paul is saying here. He's doing it unto the Lord regardless whether they accept it or not on there. Any other comments on 15?
Mm-hmm. The false apostles were feeling threatened. So this is their kind of attack to get their attention off of them and get it on to Paul, and say that he was erroneously serving in his capacity.
Yeah.
So I think it's more
That's true. Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Following the Paul's idea of parents and children, you think of parents with newborns, you pour hours upon hours upon hours into that child, and they can't give you anything back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you do it out of sheer love for them. And so I think, in some respects, that's some of what's coming through when Paul's saying here is, look, I love you guys, and even if you don't love me like you said, I'm still going to pour into you. You know, and like he says, you know, children aren't required to save for their parents, but parents for their children. I mean, think about it. My brothers and I made a comment to our parents one time. The only reason you had kids was so that we could do all these chores for you. That said, the problem with that is it took me a decade plus to start getting a return on that investment, and I had to do all the work up until then.
Good answer.
Certain extent in the same situation. Look, I'm pouring into you, pouring into you, pouring into you, and I think you may have hit on something. They weren't maturing as fast as he hoped.
Yeah.
And so I think some of that is some of the frustration he's dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. Yes. Good comments. Yeah. Okay. Verse 16. Hey,
I have a technical question, and maybe Dan can address this. he said, the King James says, but be it so, I did not burden you. Oh, wait a minute. It says, 15. I will very, very gladly spend and be spent for you. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. Period. He's making a statement, apparently, that the more I love you, it seems like the more I love you, the less you love me. And yet, the New American Standard made it a question. Is that something you had to wrestle with as a linguist? Which is it? Is it a statement or a question? The New American Standard says, I will most gladly spend and be expended for your souls. If I love you more, am I to be loved less? So he's asking a question there.
I'll take a stab at it. I think he's making a statement because he says, lest I be loved. I don't know. I think he's making a statement about it because he's done so much and he continues to do more and more and more. And, you know, it's just like the parent-child relationship. Sometimes the kid that you do the most for loves you the least. And the one you don't do a whole lot for really appreciates you when you do something. I don't know. Anyone else want to take a stab at it?
I think the versions that are translated as a question, you would take the question as a rhetorical question, not as a direct question, but another way in English grammar, another way we have of making a statement is to ask a rhetorical question.
Okay.
I don't have access to the original, so I can't answer that. But I would guess by just comparing a couple of English translations that are, you know, faithful translations.
Yeah.
The translator is attempting to get at that. You mentioned earlier, Paul has a fair degree of sarcasm throughout Second Corinthians.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subtle sarcasm to ask for.
Yeah. And with that, I said 15 was words of hurt, okay? But now when we get to 16, we go back to sarcastic Paul, okay? He says, but be it so, I did not burden you nevertheless. Being crafty, I caught you with gall. Now, what does he mean by that? We can just read it by reading it that it was a sarcastic kind of statement that he's making. But really, what he was saying is that sure, Paul wouldn't take any support money from you, but let me take this back. A lot of them thought that what was going on was that he was being crafty in the sense that he was collecting money from the Corinthians, and he was saying that this money is for the Christians in Jerusalem. But once he leaves, he's putting it in his old pocket. Okay, that's what the Corinthians, a lot of them believed, and they probably got it through these super apostles. because, you know, they couldn't bear Paul was doing this without getting paid for it. And so Paul was being very sarcastic. He didn't, he really wasn't saying that he's crafty and he, in any size or form. I think he's just trying to make a point here that these Corinthians think that he's going to take the money for himself. So, and if you look at it too, on the verse 17, not unless anyone else has any questions on that or any comments on him being crafty or anything like that before I move on. Okay. So, now he's going to prove he wasn't being crafty and the charge was false. In verse 17, it says, "Did I make a gain of you by any of them whom I sent to you?" It's a direct question. He wants them to answer that question. Did I ever do this? And in verse 18, after asking them directly this question, in verse 18, he says, "I exhorted," or you can put another word in there, "I urged Titus." Now, who was Titus? You know, we're introduced to Titus, I guess you could say, in Titus chapter 1, that this was Paul's beloved son. He was a Gentile missionary. And the other thing about Titus, too, the Corinthians had a lot of great respect for Titus. They loved Titus and had a great respect for Titus. So he goes, "I urged Titus, and with him I sent a brother." There was a brother that I think also we read in chapter 8, I can't remember, but this unnamed brother, we don't know who it is or what their name. So he sent Titus and an unnamed brother to them. And he says, "Did Titus make a gain of you?" So that tells you right there, Titus was just like Paul. He didn't accept any money either from them, and he probably had a secular job just like Paul did and made money for himself. So it's the same thing. And then he goes on, "Walt we not in the same spirit? Walt we not in the same steps?" In other words, did not Titus and his brother and me, did we not preach the same gospel to you? Is there any difference between us? And also, these two men back up the fact of any suspicion of Paul. You know, if Paul would have probably gone by himself, then they probably could be suspicious of him, one person. But here, he had two other people to back up that he was honest and that he was there for their own good and not for their money. Any comment on that or anything as far as... No comments? Any other comments on anything that we've gone over tonight? I know we went over it pretty quickly. I didn't realize it was like still. Doug twisted my arm. He said I had to finish at 8 o'clock or else he was going to cut me off. So so now we got 7 or 8 minutes. See, Doug, you pushed me too fast. See,
I can always look for another insurance agent.
I'd
like to just
go ahead.
Step back and acknowledge or appreciate the fact that Paul had the perseverance to hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
There are other examples in Paul's journey where he received less than a warm welcome and he moved on. And mm-hmm. we don't have a record of what became of that body of believers.
Mm-hmm.
But here we have a record of Paul being persistent in his love, as Steve was saying, as a parent that just continues to give even when they get mm-hmm. some sass back. And here we have this remarkable record that we can look at now
mm-hmm.
and appreciate what that body of believers in Corinth did in the early church and the foundation of the faith that we stand on now.
That's true. Yeah. Well, yeah. The other thing too, you know, when you ask these questions too, did I make a gain? Well, go back to verse 17. He goes, did I make a gain of you by any of them whom I sent unto you? I mean, he's looking for what answer from them?
No.
No. Okay. I exhorted Titus and him. Did Titus make a gain of you? No. And he goes, walk within the same spirit? Yes. Walk with not in the same steps? No. So, in other words, Paul was trying to get them to realize who he was, wasn't he? Through all this. I mean, he gave them examples. He told them how much he loved them, even though they didn't love him. Told them that the money was going to Jerusalem, that he wasn't hiding anything, he wasn't being crafty. So he was doing everything he could to prove to them that he was there by the Lord's calling and that he was concerned by for their souls, and he wanted them to embrace him just like they had done Titus and this other brother. And I think that's what he was trying to get across in these verses that we had this week and, you know, the past weeks, and even who's taking it forward. Keep that in mind. That's what Paul wanted, I think. I think that was his wish. Whether it happened, he was going to still go on and on. He was not going to be discouraged because he knows he was doing the Lord's work. He was not going to be discouraged on it.
It's one of the things in any leadership position where you're responsible, you're going to have that time where it's going to be discouraging because people will bring that into your life. So as you're serving, I think the key is to always keep that focus on who you're serving. You're not really serving the people, you're serving the Lord. So the discouragements come and go. And the verse that says, looking unto Jesus, who is the author and finisher of our faith.
Right.
So if your focus is there, and in Galatians, as John Brower said this past Sunday, you're looking up to see where your affections are set. If your affections are set on things above, then the things on earth, the things that surround, the complaining and all those things, you can put that into perspective why it happens and still give God the glory for everything. And the example that Paul set, I don't know if he had this much foresight to see what would happen even now in this time that we live in, where the gospel goes forth, but it goes along with all this financial gain and all this business, and, you know, where Jesus is actually the product that is marketed for financial gain. So if Paul were to come and sit in one of the meetings like that to see, you know, is there financial gain? And he didn't want any part of it. He wanted to give God all the glory and serve the people and make his own way. So no one could come after him and say he did it for financial,
right,
for financial gain.
True. I mean, that's one thing. One of the things I like about the assembly is that, you know, we don't have pledge cards. We don't have people call you and say, hey, are you making your pledge? You know, it's just all passed out at the Lord's table. And it's done, and the money's there, what the Lord bless us with, and that's what we use. You know, we don't let money be an object, the reason that we're here. And that's one thing I really like. Right, and we don't have car washes and all those things. So, yeah, that's one thing I do like about the assembly. Money is not the important thing, and I'm sure that's what we've learned from Paul. You know, money's not it. You know, the soul is worth a lot more than the world's goods. And, you know, the world's philosophy is money, as you've already said. I mean, anything that can get more money, whether it's in religion or Christianity or whatever you want to call it, it's wrong. And that's what Paul wanted to get across too. Any other final comments or anything? Dan, would you close us in a word of prayer tonight?
Father, I do thank you for your word and the ability that you give us to read and reflect and apply the lessons that are recorded. Thank you that we can reflect on the situation that Paul found himself in and think of ways in which we can apply that to our lives and not think of it as some irrelevant piece of history. And the other side of this teaching, thank you for the generosity that the church down through the ages has provided to the community that they serve and the communities around them. Think of how the church globally has established much of what we enjoy now and take for granted. Medicine and education, things that would not have happened without the generosity of the saints and through the ages. Thank you that Paul was able to contribute to this body in Corinth his maturity and his understanding of how you would have us live. Thank you for the fellowship we can enjoy together. Thank you for this body here in Charlotte and the contribution that it makes in this community and indeed around the world, as Barb and I are testimony of that in this assembly here. Trust you for safety as we depart now, and for those that aren't with us and have already been remembered, continue to remember them in Jesus' name.
Thank you, Dan.